Nintendo. This is episode 316. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are James Jones.
Always.
And Guillaume Veillette.
Always.
And joining us this week, we have Nintendo World Report's video producer, Jared Rosenberg.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Yeah, so Jared, you've heard him on our E3 podcast, and you've been on RFN before once or twice, right?
Once a long time ago.
Has it been that long? I guess I've seen you fairly recently, so it doesn't seem like that long ago.
Right, right. I think it was like 3 years ago.
Jared and I went to the Freak Show on Coney Island back over the 4th of July weekend.
Nice.
Yeah, it was fun. Good times.
That was a good day. Yeah. I was like, I think that was the day after I saw Roger Waters play The Wall in Yankee Stadium, which was like life-shattering. Anyway, we have a big podcast coming up for you, all kinds of Nintendo talk. We're going to do listener mail in the second segment. And first up is new business with James, who you heard got his Wii U right before the podcast last week. Now he's actually played it. So James, tell us about what you've been playing.
So I have the premium. So I did get Nintendo Land. And all I have to say is that that game is really not very much fun by yourself. Like, I enjoy playing the Donkey Kong level. It's legitimately difficult gaming. Mm-hmm. But most of the other stuff is pretty ho-hum. I mean, Takamaru's Ninja Castle is not that interesting. If you let me finish, jeez.
I'm sorry.
And the Yoshi stuff is dull. This is probably the best way of putting it. I mean, so I haven't gotten a chance to do multiplayer stuff yet. Over the Thanksgiving holiday, we were having it at the home of someone who has one non-HD TV that everyone had to share, so that really wasn't an option. Also, that was horrible. But, so I felt a desperate need to have something to play on this console, because goddamn. So I went and downloaded the Mighty Switch Force from the eShop, which... couple points for people who haven't experienced using the eShop yet. One, that took forever. That is an incredibly slow download.
Oh, well, I'll hold my tongue until my turn, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean I'm probably spoiled by the Xbox Live Arcade experience, which is like, oh, you want to download? Okay, I already got it. You don't worry about it. You're good. You want to start playing? Let's go. But it's interminable. It makes the WiiWare downloads look like they were being run.
Oh, but, I've experienced the WiiWare downloads recently, and you are... yeah, you're lying.
Look, I've never had issue with the WiiWare downloads running long. I really never have.
Hmm.
The only problem I've ever had with WiiWare is the goddamn coin sounds.
Yeah, those are annoying, but... The download speeds seem to get better over time. But anything you download on Wii is very size limited.
That's true. But I mean, Switch Force took forever.
Yeah, well, it's a hell of a lot bigger than 40 megabytes, isn't it?
That's true. It is. Still, it was shocking how long it took. But anyway, so I didn't play the 3DS version of the game. You know, I wasn't really that interested in it. I know that it's sort of this beloved game by members of our staff. It just really never really struck me as a game I was all interested in. But didn't really have many choices on the eShop at the moment. There was the game that Billy spoke about last week, which he obviously had glowing praise for.
Oh, Chasing Aurora.
Yeah. I mean, there's not much out there right now. And it was too late to go buy anything, so I just said, all right, screw it, I'll get this. I might as well. It's not that good. I'll be honest. It really isn't. I know that's not a popular opinion, but it's a puzzle-solving platforming game where the puzzles are really, really easy and the platforming's not very satisfying. I mean, it's basically all you're doing is you're trying to figure out how to get to these completely static enemies that make no effort to defend themselves or move, with, you know, a handful of traps between you and them, and infinite retries. I know the idea of the game is you're basically playing for par times. I just didn't find it very challenging. And maybe the par times are, but I feel no real inclination to go back and get them.
Yeah, but once you get into the groove, like, it's all about the execution. I didn't even think of it as a puzzle platformer. It was more, it felt more like a level of, you know, shooting out of barrels in Donkey Kong Country game.
Yeah, but there's not a whole lot of that. A lot of it's just you jumping from platform to platform and flipping.
Oh, I disagree. How far did you actually get?
I've finished all the main story missions.
Really?
I mean, there's some of that. There is.
There. I mean, I agree that the running and jumping is not that good. And the shooting is terrible in my Switch.
Oh, it's horrible. Form. And your gun is absolute rubbish.
I'm no lover of this game. But I would say my recollection of playing it is that the majority of gameplay is flipping switches, shooting around like the barrels, like Guillaume said. And,
The flipping switches, yeah. I mean, there is shooting around barrels. There's a decent amount of it. But to me, it's not what I remember about the game. I mean, there's some of it. And some of it's blind, which is not not awesome.
I got issues with the level design.
To be polite, not awesome.
So you don't see more of the screen on the... Oh, well, you can compare. But have you seen pictures of the 3DS version? Like, they really don't take advantage of the more...
It looks like it's just higher res. I mean, it may take... Again, I've only seen pictures. So it may give you some extra space. It is nice you can play the whole thing on the tablet controller and watch something interesting on television and just use it to kill time. In fact, that's how I played the majority of it. I just had it on the tablet controller and the TV had like a basketball game on.
I have tried both of them. It doesn't seem like you actually get any extra screen size or any extra.
Yeah. It just feels like all the sprites are really big.
Is there a map if you're playing on the TV?
It's just your radar.
Yeah, it's just the radar.
The radar is pointless. That game, to me, especially some of the later levels and some of the like challenge levels that you open up, get really huge, and it feels like getting around them, especially if you wanted to do it quickly, would require just basically memorizing the entire layout.
Yep.
And a map would actually be useful there. You'd still have to take your attention off the screen to look at it, so I mean, I think it would be balanced in a way. But it would make the game a little less frustrating because, like James said, I mean, especially once you start blasting out of these boxes that shoot you across the screen, some of them shoot you way off the screen. I mean, there's no way to see where they're going until you do it. And when they line up two or three and you have to choose which one is the correct one to go into, and having a map would be really nice, suffice it to say.
Yeah, it's just not... I don't know. I mean, for me, I just didn't feel like I was being rewarded as I played the game. I mean, I know that seems like it's an empty and meaningless statement, but I didn't feel compelled to continue the pursuit of these ne'er-do-wells, and I certainly didn't feel compelled to try to get par times. There's beyond just the core levels of the game, there's more to play of it. It's just, you know, I don't know that I'm going to get around to it anytime soon. After I played that for an evening and felt kind of ho-hum about it, I managed to procure a copy of Scribblenauts Unlimited for, regardless of what the list price is, considerably less than it. And through a series of what must be described as extreme couponing. And while I have a very checkered past with the series, I bought the first game excitedly after seeing it at E3 thinking this is going to be awesome. And it decidedly was not, as is commonly regarded, the string of rope jetpack glue solution that could pretty much solve every puzzle. This game doesn't allow that, and the addition of real gameplay and puzzle mechanics to this whole setup makes it feel much more interactive, much less of rote memorization of the solutions. A lot of times you don't actually have to accomplish anything other than creating the right item, and the AI more or less takes it over from there. That limits the ability for you to just create kludgy one-size-fits-all solutions, and a lot of times it requires you to think somewhat creatively about what these characters could want. There's a stage in which you have to find something to make Poseidon feel good about ruling his kingdom. And if you say mermaid, thinking, oh, this will be easy because they represent him as a merman, I believe he just electrocutes her and that's the end of that. But what I ended up giving him was described as Royal Starfish, which was a starfish with a giant crown on its head, which he then just proceeded to rip the crown off the starfish and put it on himself, and that completed the objective. The starfish had nothing to do with him completing the objective. Him essentially removing the starfish from whatever authority is pertains over the empire of starfish and simply placing the crown on his head is what satisfied his puzzle.
So you could have summoned Burger King and gotten the same result.
Proper noun, but yes. Royal Hamburger.
Princess Beach.
In a similar situation, it was an underwater stage and I needed someone to translate for a dolphin because that's necessary. And I summoned a translator and then realized, oh shit, I'm underwater. Yeah, and he did too. It was like, okay, that plan didn't go great. I don't know. I enjoy the game. It's got a very good sense of humor. Apparently, Maxwell has 41 siblings, which you meet throughout the game, and they're all kind of ridiculous. But my personal favorite is there's a fairy tale castle that's sitting on a cloud that's kind of a secret level. You have to find it from another level. And Maxwell is wearing a jester's costume, and he's tiny because it's the castle from Jack and the Beanstalk. And he has a brother in there wearing a suit of armor who's just running around, basically getting in trouble the entire time. It's actually a legitimately enjoyable experience. Now, in terms of being sophisticated, high-end gameplay, it isn't. I mean, it's still a bit of a sandbox. It's hard to justify anything remotely equivocal to what the list price for this game is. Although, if you're looking for it, you should definitely not buy it for $60 because many, many big box retailers are selling it at $50. It's hard to come to terms with this game as being a really comprehensive experience. But again, this is launch window. This is the kind of stuff you deal with. It's still leaps and bounds better than previous experiences with the series. And the ability to have the item editor where you can just go in and create custom things and then set them loose is actually really exciting.
Can you draw, or is it just like attaching things?
It's attaching and removing things. So you could start with a dragon and then remove its head and replace it with something else.
Oh,
or you could take its wings off and replace them with the wings of another creature. So I did a robotic dragon, which means it had like cyber skin, put a sheep's head on it. So it breathed fire and thawed at you. And then attached jet plane wings to it. And it just flew around the stage setting things on fire. Which was amusing up until the point that I realized it was going to set me on fire and I summoned another one and they fought each other to the death.
That's funny.
It's funny. It's a have your own. It's kind of the same stuff that makes Smash Brothers funny. It's just the sheer randomness of the stuff that goes down can be really amusing.
But it's single player.
But it is, yeah. I could see it being fun with other people in the room, though, tossing out suggestions.
Like the problem with sandboxes is that you're basically trying to amuse yourself.
Yeah. And that's, for me, this game kind of worked out because A, I got it at a good deal, and B, that's kind of what I was looking for.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that there's usually a lot of groups of solutions to puzzles, and you get different results for which one you give them. So a lot of times they'll tell you there's a kind of a funny tagline to go with your solution. And it's a little touch like that. Like, there seems to be way more options for solving puzzles in this game than there were in previous ones, which I'm happy with. And part of that is because it's not all action-based puzzles. And also because I can control Maxwell with the stick, which feels much better. Again, I know you could do that in the second game, but I didn't play the second game. And I feel good about it.
Wouldn't have been with a stick, it would have been D-pad. So it probably is even a little better maybe now.
Yeah, you can control them with both in Wii U game.
Are you still mainly typing in words?
Yeah. There's a lot of that. In some cases, you don't actually have to create an item at all. Sometimes you can just solve it by what's already in the stage. That's not common, but occasionally, you know, there'll be a character who wants something that's already there, and you just have to go get it. Now, it may not be immediately apparent that what's there is sufficient to solve the puzzle, but it is.
This might seem trivial, but it's a complaint I've always had with Scribblenauts, which is that the game contains no scribbling or anything even remotely resembling scribbling.
Nope.
So you don't write your answers. There's no handwriting recognition software. It's you type on a keyboard.
Yep.
And now with Unlimited, you can create your own characters, but you don't draw them and bring them to life. You just sort of edit objects that are already there.
Right.
It's very strange branding to me. Yeah, I mean, Scribblenauts is a nice sounding word, but it doesn't in any way describe what happens in this game, in this whole series.
Now, I think in the first game, you could try to draw things and it would try to interpret what you meant, but it was, if I recall, it was really kludgy and just didn't work.
Okay. I don't recall that. I don't think that I have.
Are you confusing it with Drawn to Life?
No. No. Although it's the same people.
Yes.
No, I believe in the first game there was an option to – it was like behind, like on the keyboard there was little tabs you could hit and try to draw the item and it would try to interpret what that was.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I seem to recall it just not working.
I don't remember that either.
Yeah,
I can go pull it out. It's sitting right there.
Didn't one of you guys, or was it just someone on Twitter who said they were trying to play Locke's Quest?
I started the tutorial and realized that I didn't want to play this for, 12, 20 hours. I'm not into tower defense games all that much, and it looked very repetitive already in, the first two missions that taught you how to play the game. So seemed like very nice presentation. They put a story to it. Like the music was epic, for lack of a better term, and it looked all very nice, but it seemed already tedious right at the beginning.
Yeah. You could have almost written my review. Yeah, so Locke's Quest is probably not very well known. It's a little bit of obscure DS game that was made by the guys who made Scribblenauts, Fifth Cell. And I've almost never heard anyone else ever talk about it, so I was just kind of curious as to what you thought. Not very surprised that you came away with that impression. It's a very pretty, well-presented game. Actually has a very intriguing story. Unfortunately, the gameplay is really slow and kind of frustrating and not that great. So it is what you say. All right, so Scribblenauts Unlimited. I'm happy to hear that you actually enjoy it, James. I was a little worried when you brought this up, especially hearing that you bought it for yourself.
Right.
I mean, I know you paid much less. Do you feel like for $60, this is kind of a hard sell?
Oh, it's an impossible sell. I don't understand why it's $60 anywhere. There's no reason for it to be. Even at $50, this is a hard sell. I mean,
I think the Steam version of the same game is $30.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Steam version doesn't have Mario in it.
By the way, Mario in the game is not particularly good at anything. there's one where you have to come up with an enemy for a dragon. And I thought, oh, well, Mario fights dragons all the time. Nope. He looks at it, shits his pants, and then runs away. I mean, it's kind of funny. He just goes, oh, and just runs the other direction.
Does Charles Martinet provide the voice, or does he actually go, oh?
Nothing makes any noise in Scribblenauts, usually. I mean, there is actually kind of a story in this one, like a well-presented story, actually, about what happens when a father and mother give their two young children an item that lets them do basically anything, which is that book, and how it turns them into utter bastards, and having to redeem themselves for being utter bastards about it.
So this is the story of Care Bears the movie.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Except one of the Care Bears is being turned into a rock.
I think that happened in the Care Bears movie.
I wouldn't know.
Right.
All right, guys. So Jared is up next with new business. And tell me about the live stream. I didn't catch any of it, unfortunately. I was busy trying to make my Wii U work.
Basically, down at Neil's in New Jersey, we ended up playing a lot of Nintendo Land. That was the main game we played a lot of, but we basically, on Twitch TV, you could watch us play. We had a microphone set up, and every once in a while, I also had my video camera with me to try to get footage of what was happening on the gamepad, but that didn't work too well. But if people are actually interested in watching that, they can watch it on twitch.tv/NintendoWorldReport, and it's all there.
Oh, it's archived. I didn't know that.
Yep.
So it was fun.
Yeah, it was a good time. We did a bunch of with Nintendo Land. We did some Sonic and All Stars Racing Transformed. where we found out the multiplayer does not work at all.
From Neil's review, it sounded like if you have more than three people, it starts being really choppy.
So it starts being a Sonic game then.
Yes, so the game does support a five-player, so that's how we started. And along with a horrible frame rate, the graphics became sub-HD and looked probably worse than like Mario Kart Double Dash on GameCube. They looked terrible.
Oh, Sega, never change.
But if you did, I think we dropped it down to three people where the frame rate got better, but it's still, the game looks really good in single player mode, but it's just bad to whatever they did for split screen.
If you let the game play the demo movie at the start, it looks great.
Hey, the demo movie's good.
Just don't interact with it. Just don't do that. It looked bad.
So when I said the multiplayer doesn't work at all, so yeah, the frame rate's really bad if you're doing regular racing. But it actually has a few special Wii U modes, which we were excited to play. But those are the modes that do not work at all, which will need a patch.
Nice.
There is a mode where I believe one player, Neil had the gamepad. So on the gamepad, he would play as a monkey ball, or as, you know, AIE, or whatever their names are. And
II, Nana, Popo, Baby, yeah.
Basically, he would he had a role over the other racers. So he was the monkey ball. He was the character for monkey ball, while the others were racers. So when we started up that mode, basically what would immediately happen the minute countdown ended was the game it would immediately end. It'd be like Neil's won, and it would just be we basically would spawn all together right next to each other. With with the monkey ball character on top of us, and it just ended. And we tried that about five times, and it happened over and over.
Well, now I definitely want to go watch this archive video.
You would think they would catch that in Q&A, right?
See, Guillaume right now is pretending Sega does Q&A.
Oh,
Guillaume obviously has never watched the now infamous video of Sonic 2006 bugs, which are amazing, including the fact that if Sonic lays down on a box and spins and does the spin kick long enough, the box starts to fly into space. Why? No one knows. It just does.
The incredible thing is Sonic 2006 was literally a tech demo until very late in the development process. The first time I saw that game demoed at E3, it didn't have Sonic in it. It was Sega showing off their next generation graphics in physics engine.
And the physics in that game suck!
Yeah, and it was played from the first person, and they moved through the environment collecting rings, and they kind of ran up the walls and stuff like that, and it bugged out hard in the demo. I mean, it basically just went completely bizarre. The screen just started flying all over the place, and then it crashed and shut down. They said, thanks for coming, everybody. And like 6 months later, that game was Sonic.
The most infamous thing about that game is when it was shown at TGS. And the TGS trailer, they actually have a physics engine bug in the trailer. In the fucking trailer for the game, the physics engine spazzes out.
Oh. I mean, James, you joke around and say Sega never change. But if Sega never changes, pretty soon they're going to change drastically into not being a company anymore.
Good! Sega, never change.
Ugh.
No company deserves as many chances as they have gotten.
There's a lot of negative about the multiplayer, and there's actually another bug where I believe you get stuck in the mission mode where you can't progress, so that they've also promised a patch for that. But the single player is fun. It's actually... It controls really well, really inventive tracks. They've pulled from some really random games. They've got Skies of Arcadia, you know, regular Sonic levels.
Don't do that to that series.
There's a Burning Rangers level, which was a Sega Saturn game, which came out like at the end of its life, which only sold like 5,000 copies.
At the end of its life, also known as the start.
James, quit. Just... So, Jared, do you actually own your own copy of this?
I'm actually renting it from GameFly, but I'm actually strongly considering buying it.
Nice. Neil gave it a very positive review, and the previous game in the series, the first Sonic Kart Racer game, got good reviews also. So I believe you when you say it's actually a good game. It sounds like they just really seriously need to finish it.
Yeah, clearly this game must have something to it, because I was going to buy it, and then Jared started talking me out of it. then, but now, you know, I trust... If you're going to buy it yourself, I...
Wait to see if Sega has enough money to finance patching it.
Oh, God.
they're doing better.
They're doing better than what? I would like to say, though, that if the concepts of moving at the speed of sound, does that mean he goes slower in a cart than when he runs on his feet?
Maybe it's a handicapper. I mean, it puts all these other characters on equal footing with Sonic.
Gotta go slightly less fast.
And Sonic All-Stars Racing is the cheapest retail Wii U game. I think it's only $40, right?
Yep.
Yes, yep.
So, I mean, if you like kart racers and you want a pretty good one, or at least part of a pretty good one, then it might be a pretty good choice, you know?
Wow, we're really selling this game.
It's horrible!
It's actually sort of like a mix of... the game was developed by Sumo Digital, who did... they've done all the ports of Outrun 2, so it actually has a lot of elements from Outrun, along with... they gained a lot of members from... who were the guys who made Blur and Project Gotham Racing? A lot of the developers, after they shut down, joined the team. So it's actually... It's a good racing game. I know I've been very negative about... some aspects.
I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of legitimate complaints to be made, but I would mainly play it single player
part
anyway.
Of it doesn't work.
Well, the
you
local
can't play
doesn't.
Part of the game.
The local doesn't work. You know how many times I've played local Mario Kart 7? Zero.
Fine, but still.
I really don't care. I mean, is the online okay?
The one time I tried to do online, it wouldn't work.
Oh, boy.
Okay, now that is a breaker for me.
Well played, Sega!
Did you manage to see any of the single player? Because there's it's mission-based, right? Does it compare to Diddy Kong Racing, or...?
There's a classic Grand Prix mode. That mode works, and the...
Features works.
And, then there's also a mission mode where they'll have you, try to either... beat certain racers, or I believe it has some tricks and things. I actually didn't do much of that mode, but one of the cool things that I haven't mentioned at all is, along with regular car racing, in the tracks you actually also have, similar to Diddy Kong Racing, you actually have racing on water and then also racing in the air. And unlike Diddy Kong Racing, they all happen during the course of the race, so you'll actually, like, jump through the water, and then, when you start a new lap, there'll actually be some times where, like, something will happen where, like, a river will rush in, and then you'll have water in a part that didn't have water, or you'll be flying over what you had once been racing on.
And your vehicle just transforms into whatever's needed at the time, right?
Correct, yeah.
Hmm. And it's more significant of a gameplay element than it was in Mario Kart 7?
Definitely, because it's not like just for a second where you have to like glide down. It's actually the game almost like for the water parts, it almost controls sort of like Hydro Thunder, and then for the flying parts, you're in the air for quite a bit, and I'm not sure what I would compare that to, but it controls well and it's cool.
Nice.
Okay. This is starting to sound, but we need a checklist of the modes that work and the ones that don't work, and then I can figure out whether.
Put it on the box.
Yeah, on the back of the box.
So Pat's exactly. Just gonna remove those options from the menu. Fixed.
If I hear that the online gets fixed or it gets better or whatever, and there are actually people playing it, like I would consider this because I like kart racers and I don't care about the local multiplayer. I would almost never use that. So if the single player works and the online works. That's a full game to me, and, you know, the cheaper price is tempting. Really, it is. So, all right, cool. And, Jared, you got to tell me, what the hell is Little Inferno?
Yeah, so, you know, Little Inferno from some of the guys who made World of Goo. It's hard to say exactly what it is. I would say you could say it's a fireplace simulator in a way.
Oh boy!
In the game, you have a big catalog where you can buy items. So it can be basically anything. They have anything you can imagine. There's China.
The country of China.
Not the country of China.
You're not going to stick that in a fireplace.
Like dishes and things. There's you can buy soda pop. You can buy giant teddy bears. You can buy rocking horses, televisions. Basically, there's probably like there are hundreds of items in the game.
So it's like Scribblenauts.
That's what I was thinking.
Unlike Scribblenauts, in a tiny way, it's like Scribblenauts, but the main thing you do with the items is that you place them in your small little room. The game does have a plot where you're, like, trapped in a room, and it's, like, snowing outside, and, like, for some reason you're trapped there, and you get letters from your neighbor who's also trapped, and you both have a little correspondence that way. But the main thing that goes on is that you can... you have fire. The game you can either control using the Wii Remote mouse controls where you would basically just hold down and you can draw like little things of fire anywhere. But the main thing is you put your items in, you light your items on fire, and you watch them burn or explode. Or basically you're just destroying things.
Take that, Prometheus.
So it's a game for psychopaths?
Yes, it's also... Okay, so that's the main thing you do, but it's also... It's mainly a puzzle game, because you have a list of combos. So it'll say... I'm trying to remember one. There's a combo, I think it's like... Here's an example. It's like Big Cat, the Big Cat watching television combo. That's probably not in the game, but... what you would need to fill that combo is drop in, like, the cat doll and a television, and then have them, burn them together, and then you get that combo checked, and you get, I believe it actually gives you a stamp for that. So there's about 100 combos they want you to fill, and if you get them together, you then win.
I don't even have the capacity to make jokes at this point. Wow.
I mean, I have to say, it doesn't sound fun, but it's getting pretty good reviews. So, I mean, do you like it? Are you enjoying it?
I've been enjoying it. I've played about, I would say, 2 hours. It's really relaxing. It's sort of...
Not if you're in the fireplace.
It's basically, you just have a lot of fun, destroying things, and the game's filled with a lot of really funny animations. They have, along with, like, regular household items, you can have, like, a nuke, and it'll just blow up everything. You can get a fire alarm, where after you light it on fire, it then causes water to rain down because the fire alarm went off. It's really inventive. I do realize, describing it sounds sort of boring, but it's
it sounds psychotic.
Some men just want to see the world burn.
The game is psychotic. I would agree with that. It's that the neighbor who sends you letters and things, and sometimes will ask you for, like, items, and then will send you items in return, they are crazy and will write you these ridiculous letters where they're saying, like, I want a sandwich, and just really strange stuff. It's a weird game, and, you could argue it's not a game, but it's fun.
All right, so that's Little Inferno. We do have a review of that. You can read more about it. It's a very positive review.
That is not this segment, Johnny. That segment comes later.
I'm just saying, I mean, it's easy to be incredulous about any description of this, but it seems like it does have this weird power over people when they actually play it.
Yes, it's called Prometheus' Gift of Fire.
All right. So, thanks, Jared. I'm going to follow up with my new business. I finally got my Wii U this week. It came in actually a little faster than I expected. It came in, it was only gone for, a week based on when my shipment actually went out. So I'm pretty sure someone actually had to probably work over Thanksgiving to get it back to me that quickly. They did end up replacing the unit. They probably looked at it and said, we could repair this, but it's not worth the labor, and we're trying to get through all these launch units that were broken, so let's just send them a new one. So it came back, has a new serial number and everything. I thought it was pretty interesting that the repair receipt actually lists the price that they would have charged me if this hadn't been under warranty. And just in case anyone was curious, if you ever need to replace the console itself, nothing else, no cables, no gamepad, no nothing, just the unit itself, it'll cost you $175. That's probably a wholesale price that Nintendo charges to repair centers. You know, there would be a markup or something if they ever actually sold it through their website, which they wouldn't because it's literally the system.
Yeah.
But I thought that was interesting. It maybe gives you – you can do a little math and figure out how much the gamepad would be. And some people have broken gamepads that they've had to send in. So I'd like to hear, you know, what their receipt said. It'd be interesting to see what they price a gamepad alone at the wholesale rate. But it's probably about $100. I'm sure whenever they get around to selling gamepads standalone, it will cost a good bit more than that. But anyway, that was kind of neat. I was very pleasantly surprised to find that when I turned it on and connected it to the internet, it did a check for a system update and didn't find one. So they had actually pre-installed the latest firmware to the system before they sent it back to me, which, trust me, when you've been sitting around for over a week wanting to play the system, not having to wait an hour for that thing to download and install was very nice. I mean, of course, I ended up waiting for other things to download and install, but that's one less on top of the stack. First thing I did was try to set up Miiverse and, you know, do some of the kind of utility type stuff. You know, I got my TV remote working and that kind of thing. And then I went to download Mario, and I was surprised Mario is only about 1.7 gigs, which is not very big for an HD game. That's, you know, maybe more typical of like a large XBLA game or something like that.
Yep.
Not unheard of, but unusually small. And I think that's just Nintendo's kind of Spartan, you know, design philosophy. They don't like big bloated experiences. Assassin's Creed, which was the next thing, the next game that I downloaded on the system, was literally an order of magnitude larger, 17 gigabytes.
Holy crap.
Obviously, I left that to download overnight. It took about 12 hours for that to download.
Oh my god!
Yep, and then it took another hour or so to install it because it's such a large file that it had to it took forever to install as well.
But you know, even installing Mighty Switch Force seemed to take forever.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't understand that process. I mean, I don't get why that's necessary, or why it's not necessary on Xbox, for instance.
But it's necessary on PSN. And just like PSN, when you download a full game like that, you can go in the download management thing and choose, check the box, turn the console off after downloading, and it will install when it's done.
I don't remember if it actually did that or not for me on Assassin's Creed. But yeah, I did set it to, you know, just keep downloading. Whenever you finish, turn it off. You know, hopefully that would happen in the middle of the night. So anyway, I finally got Assassin's Creed. Of course, it took up most of my internal memory. So now I'm in the market for a hard drive pretty soon. For whenever the next game I download is probably going to be too big for me to fit on the internal memory now. Have barely played either one of them. I've played maybe an hour of Mario. I did find the secret exit that Guillaume hinted at last week, and I'm amazed that you found that. Did you have help?
No, I was looking for the third coin, and I just, like, my second run through the level, I happened to just, oh, hey, there's something here.
I was specifically looking for it, and it took me about 5 times going through the level to find it. Even when I knew exactly where it was, it still took me about 5 minutes to find it.
I did not expect it. I was not looking there. It just happened.
It's an insanely well-hidden secret path that I don't know that I would have ever in a million years have found that if I had known that something was there. It doesn't even, on the map, it's not even obvious that there is a secret route out of that level.
No. And that made the discovery all the sweeter.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine.
I was just so high on that discovery after that. I was like, wow, best game ever. I've since, you know, like, I've tempered my evaluation of the game, but...
It's a secret within a secret, and, you know, there's a couple things like that. Like, if you ever found the top secret area in Super Mario World, if you actually found that on your own without having a guide or someone hinting you, you'd feel pretty awesome about it, because that place is really obscure, the way that you find that place. You know, and the reward is very sweet. So, yeah, anyway, Mario, I like it so far. I found out that I can play it in the bathroom and I can play it in my bedroom on my bed, which is awesome. So, that's probably how I'm going to be playing, not in the bathroom, but I'm going to probably be playing it on my bed quite a bit. It's just really nice. You know, it turns it into, it's not even a DS because it's only one screen when you're away from the TV. It really just kind of turns it into a gigantic GBA. It's kind of what it feels like. And it looks, not great on the screen. I mean, I have to say, in general, the gamepad, the graphics quality and the display quality is just really not that great on the screen. But the fact that you can do it, there's so much utility built into that feature. You know, it frees you up so much to do things with the gamepad when you're away from the TV, or if someone else is using the TV. Not a problem in my household, but, you know, for a lot of people, it's really nice. I think it's an awesome feature. It does make me wonder. There's a couple of things about the gamepad that make me wonder. At some point, is there going to be the gamepad XL? Not XL, but like, will there be like the gamepad 2 that has, you know, multi-touch for newer games, or just a nicer screen, or it weighs less, or they change the form factor a little bit to make it more ergonomic? Because it's not that comfortable to hold for a game like Mario. I found almost immediately, cause I was playing a little bit lower on the grip. So I was using the D-pad and the buttons and not really using the joysticks at all. And the corners and the bottom of the gamepad is kind of digging into my hands a little bit. Maybe I'm holding it too tight. I'm still getting used to the hardware, but the gamepad construction, I'm not that crazy about. Like the face buttons rattle a little bit if you shake it, because they're very loose, you know, they're very loose, kind of mushy face buttons, and they're just not held in tension very well. And so they kind of make a noise if you move the gamepad around. And I'm not super impressed with the construction on that thing, but, it's okay. I will say that the touchscreen is more sensitive than it was back at E3, at either E3 that we saw it demoed. And I'm very happy about that. You can actually play it with your finger. And I was really worried about that from the E3 experience. I thought, man, I don't want to use the stylus every single time I have to touch something on the screen. And, you can totally use your finger, and it doesn't feel like you have to push hard on it. No. Or tap it with your fingernail. It's sensitive enough. It's fine.
Yeah. I've only played a couple of minutes of trying to, and you can use the touch screen to draw, you know, squares for the magician, you know, to uh-huh. create boxes. And I found myself favoring that over, you know, holding a shoulder button and using the right control stick, like you would with a controller on the PSN version, for instance. So very responsive, and I just do it with my finger.
On PC, you can use the mouse, which is nice.
Oh, yeah. Probably the best way to play that game is on PC, but this works surprisingly well on the gamepad.
Well, I'm glad people are trying to. It's not a game. I don't need it on Wii U. I've already played it on my PC, but it's an awesome game. I'm really glad that, you know, a new group of people is getting a chance to experience that. And it's gorgeous.
It
really
is.
Fantastic looking game. So it's a good showcase for your new system. Yeah, so I tried out a little bit of Netflix and found that the image quality didn't seem to be quite as good as it is on my PS3. I don't know if that was the network traffic. I mean, clearly there are some issues with this, but that's probably not going through Nintendo servers. It's probably just going straight from Netflix servers to your system. So I don't know, but it didn't seem quite as sharp, even on the TV. Didn't look quite as good as my PS3 Netflix app. So the jury's still out as to whether I'm going to, you know, switch over to using Wii U as my primary Netflix.
I also had a similar experience to that as well. keeping in mind that I usually use my Xbox or my Netflix device.
Yeah.
So that's probably, I mean, it could well be that they're just, that it's just, it's new and they're still working out the edges, as it were.
Sure. Yeah. And Netflix can and will update their apps over time. They will improve them. And yeah, so the first Xbox app was really bad. So they've definitely gotten better over time. And, you know, I'm not too worried about it, but I will say being able to switch the display to the screen is, I mean, the fact that I can go in my bedroom and just lay on my bed and watch movies through Netflix is really, really nice. Cause right now I don't have a good way to do that. I'd have to like show the movie on my computer and then like turn the monitor and crane my head in a really weird way to watch it on my computer monitor from bed. Which I never do. So being able to just walk around with Netflix in my hand on a pretty big screen is very much appreciated. And I did something I bet none of you guys have really spent much time on, but I tried the video chat feature.
Oh.
The first night that I was still setting up my system and everything, well, technically I'm still currently setting it up. I'm still doing the WeTransfer and re-downloading everything to the SD card. But the very first night, I got a call from Billy. He was the first person I added as a friend on the system. And he was just messing around with it too, I guess. And he had only used it on day one, he said, with David Ellis, and hadn't really messed around with the video chat ever since then. So he didn't realize that you could draw on the screen. And that, of course, that's the first thing I did, was draw a big dick on, you know, like right on top of his face on the screen, because I'm immature and that's what you do. It's, you know, it's PictoChat with video. What I didn't realize, and this is really funny, you should know this going into it if you don't already, but, you, both of you in the Wii U video chat share the same drawing space. And so what that means is by default, you see the other person's face on your screen, they see your face on their screen, and whatever you draw is shown on both. So I draw a big dick on Billy's face, and on his screen, it looks like I'm drawing a dick on my face. So it's unusual and not what I expected, but at the same time, it works fine, because what it means is you can also basically do kind of collaborative drawing
on each other's faces of dicks.
Whereas in PictoChat, we used to do a lot of collaborative drawing at E3 where, you know, one of us would draw something and then the other would copy it and then add really profane things to it and then send it back to everybody. And it would be hilarious. On Wii U video chat, that happens simultaneously. So you can both draw, but you can do it at the same time and immediately see what the other person's drawing. And it's actually really cool. The video quality was fine. You know, it's very lighting dependent, of course, because the gamepad doesn't have a light built into it. So you really would, it's better if you have a really well lit room when you do it, if you want to see the other person's face. But, I thought it worked really well. There was like maybe half a second of lag, which for video chat across the country is not bad at all. And, it was easy to set up. It was easy to use. So I would definitely look forward to doing it. It was really, you know, like this seems simple, but I, you know, I talk to Billy pretty frequently. I only really ever see Billy once a year, and that's at E3, and that's for usually very short periods of time because he and I have different things going on. So usually we meet up, we say hey, and that's about it. So just seeing Billy's face at an unexpected point in the year was a nice surprise. And it made me think, you know, it would be really fun to video chat with all these other guys on Nintendo World Report and a lot of other friends I have, you know, like friends from back home, friends who have moved off to Texas or to New York or just different parts of the country who I very rarely see, and I might communicate over Twitter or Facebook or something like that, but like to actually see their face and to talk to them face to face is something that, that I haven't had a chance to do in a long time. So I think that's actually really exciting.
It sure is going to change the dynamic of recording this podcast once we move over to Wii U chat.
I remember for a long time we'd talked about trying to record a podcast over, Wii Speak channel.
Oh, it still has to be the WeSpeak channel, because that's the infinite idiocy of the WeSpeak channel. It reticulates around itself like a python, a very fucking stupid python.
Well, I don't think I could use the WeSpeak channel anymore, even though I still have the microphone. The app for it was deleted when I did the Wii U transfer,
yep.
And you it came with a one-time download, I think. So I don't know that I could re-download it on my old Wii, which no longer has the license for it. And you can't download it on the Wii U because Wii U doesn't support Wii Speak, as far as I know. It certainly didn't come over in the transfer.
Are you sure it's deleted on the Wii? Because I was pretty sure they don't delete things from the Wii if it can't transfer over.
Oh, well, you know, I didn't go back and check. So maybe you're right. I'd have to look at that. Right now, I did the transfer because I like having everything on one system, especially a new system that is less likely to crap out in 6 months, I hope. Like I said, I'm sure that they tested it before they sent it back to me, so I feel pretty good about this unit, finally. But my old Wii is old. I've had it for a few years. It's even my second Wii, because the first one crapped out after a couple of years. The SD card was really messed up on it, the port. And, it makes a lot of noise and it doesn't always sound good. I don't have the greatest confidence that my old Wii is going to stick around forever. So there's that aspect as well, trying to protect my digital assets and make sure that they, you know, that I can use them in the future. I like having less consoles. I mean, I'm not looking forward to the one console future. I'm trying to keep up with the three console present. I certainly don't need the fourth sitting around with a bunch of games that I actually want to play sometimes on it. So being able to move those over to a new system and cleaning up the clutter is very valuable to me. And I do hope that eventually they're going to have some kind of solution to letting you play at least some of the virtual console games on your gamepad. You know, I wonder if it's going to be kind of like the Ambassador situation on 3DS, where they'll add things to the shop, and then when they do, if you already own a copy, then they'll make it available for you to play in Wii U mode with all these new features like gamepad support and everything. And so it may only end up being a small subset of the games that you already have. But I think they'll find at least a partial solution for that. So there's a lot of reasons for me to do it. But it is taking forever because you can't just play the stuff off your SD card. You have to re-download it.
Yep.
So I'm not finished with that process. It's going to take a while. It turns out I own about 75 games between Virtual Console and WiiWare. And a lot of them are fairly large. The Virtual Console stuff's not too bad, but the WiiWare games, some of them are fairly large and they take a while to download. So it's going to be a while.
When I did my transfer, I made sure to put as many NES games on the internal memory as I could, because really what I find that takes time is not really the downloading, but rather going to your account, like the games you've already downloaded, flipping through the pages, and then clicking through the various menus in the Wii Shop.
True. It's very true. Yeah, if you could queue them up or have them download in the background or something, some semblance of a modern system to buy games from the internet,
yeah,
then it wouldn't be so bad. But it's Nintendo 2006, you know, so.
Yeah. If you could do that on the gamepad also, it wouldn't be so bad. You could do something else at the same time, but you have to be in front of the TV. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah. So we're getting along in the segment, so I think I will forego Crashmo until next week because I haven't played a whole lot of it, only maybe an hour of it. It's really hard, really hard. It looks a lot like Pushmo, but the mechanics of the puzzles are a lot different because the rules are different. But it seems very good. So if you like Pushmo and you thought it was too easy, then Crashmo should be right up your alley. But I'll probably talk about that more next week. The other game I really wanted to spend a little time on is Epic Mickey Power of Illusion, because this was a game a lot of us had highly anticipated and played it. Jared was there when Guillaume too, when I played it back at E3 and did the interview while playing the game, which is
yep.
Really difficult and probably not a good idea. And now we have the video to prove it. So thanks for that, Jared.
Sure.
John Linneman was saying this is the game, this was like probably the next game that he actually cared about on 3DS. And that he's going to be sorely disappointed if he actually picks it up. It's not a very good game, unfortunately. I have to say, I'm not the only one who thinks that. There are also people who disagree with me. I mean, Neil gave it, I think, a 7.5. He thought it was obviously had issues, but was pretty good overall. I would go much lower than that. I think as a platformer, it's not a good platformer. I think as Disney fan service, it's not good Disney fan service. I think it's very pretty, really beautiful 2D artwork, the parallax scrolling, the 3D effect is subtle, but if you actually take the time to look at the backgrounds, they look really great in 3D, and the artwork is just fantastic. The music's really nice, but the actual playing of the game is really never very much fun. It's not just the painting. The paint, the thinner stuff is bad. It's definitely one of the biggest problems with the game, and it slows the pacing down tremendously. But just running around and jumping doesn't feel good. It really, and it never gets better. It's very, very slow and floaty. And I think they must have intended it to be that way. But I was wondering, is this just because this game is a slave to its source material, that they're trying to emulate Castle of Illusion, which I never played on Genesis? So I went to YouTube and looked up a video of it, and Castle of Illusion plays at least twice as fast as this. So I don't know what they're thinking, really. I mean, if they just sped the game up, and if they made Mickey not jump so high, because it feels like you spend about half the game waiting for Mickey to fall back down, because he jumps so high and he falls so slowly that you're just always kind of suspended in the air. And it feels like if something happens, you won't be able to react quickly to it because you're just kind of hanging there in the air. There's way too much hang time. Mickey got too much ups. It's really, like, it seems like that would be a good thing, but it's actually really bad.
Gravity mode off.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like the gravity is turned down to about, like, maybe half of what it should be in this game. And it makes the game really lack the immediacy that you want from a 2D platformer. The level designs are not that interesting. The enemy placement is clever, I guess, in the sense that they often will put enemies in places that you wish they weren't.
Dark Souls style.
I read a review of it because I was wondering, like, am I the only one who's this frustrated with the game? And so I read a couple of reviews, and someone, I don't remember the site, it might have been Game Revolution. I don't know, but the review put it really perfectly. It said the game is like a really boring cakewalk for the first half, and then it immediately becomes infuriatingly difficult. And that's exactly how I felt about it. Now, that's halfway into a game that's not very long in the first place, but a lot of the reviews said, oh, it's great, but it's just way too short. I would say the length is not really my problem with the game. It's just never fun. It just never feels very good. And a lot of it comes down to physics. The combat is not interesting. The game has nothing to do with Epic Mickey. And unfortunately, the ways that they try to shoehorn it into that franchise, which is not a good franchise in the first place, they really should probably disassociate themselves from Epic Mickey and make this more of a standalone thing. But the things they do to make it more like the console Epic Mickey games are add the paint and thinner mechanics, which don't make any sense in the context of the 2D platformer and are not fun and take way too long. And they add this inane story to it. All the characters talk way too much. They never say anything interesting. You find all these Disney characters, like 30 Disney characters strewn through the game that you can find. And finding them is sometimes very hard. A lot of them are very hard to get to. You get to them, and this is like a very iconic character, like Jafar from Aladdin. And he's written with none of the evil zeal of the character in the movie. He doesn't actually do anything. They go back to this fortress area, which is like this kind of simulation part, this like farm, this Harvest Moon farm back at the beginning. And you go back there and you talk to him, and he just stands around and asks you to get things for him. They just give you fetch quests. They don't really interact with each other. Sometimes they'll give items to each other, except you have to do the courier service of taking them back and forth. But they don't ever actually do anything. They're not characterized very well for the characters that they are. And they just kind of stand around. It's really pathetic. I mean, what's the point of putting all these characters in the game if you can't play as them, you can't play with them? Most of them you don't even get to fight. They just kind of stand there. It's really kind of mind-numbing.
Well, they couldn't get the rights to the actual good characters, so they got the rights for the direct-to-video sequels version of the characters.
No, I mean, there are some really great characters in here, but they don't do anything. It's just boggles the mind. I really don't understand it. So yeah, ultimately I feel like, you know, I was excited for this because Dream Rift, I have to say, I mean, Monster Tail was good, not great, but a good game, showed a lot of potential, a lot of promise. And it felt like if these guys really had a bigger budget and a little more time, they could do something amazing. And I thought that's what would happen with Power of Illusion, and really quite the opposite. This is much worse than Monster Tale. It is not even in the same league, shouldn't be in the same conversation as Henry Hatsworth, which is one of the best Nintendo DS games ever made. And I think it's really sad. I'm thinking about trading this in, which I haven't done in years. So I'm really disappointed. You know, I think this is a shame. If you haven't already bought it yet, I certainly do not recommend that you buy it. If you enjoyed it somehow, that's great. I'd like to hear what you like about this game, because I didn't find a whole lot to enjoy besides that it's pretty. That's about all I can say for it, really. I'm kind of bitter about it, quite frankly. I think it's sad. So let's move on. Let's move to happier territories, Guillaume.
All right, so I've played the free levels that every new Super Mario Bros. 2 owners have received. I hope that everyone has played it so that I don't have to talk about it.
Why don't you want to talk about it?
No, it's really, really good. It's really, really fun. The DLC levels are supposedly a reward for collecting so many coins worldwide. Nintendo has been tracking the coins that we've been collecting collectively. And so they unleash this free DLC upon us. It's the same as the regular DLC, as it is not part of the main game. It is part of the Coin Rush mode. So you start with a 100 seconds time limit, but you don't. You get so many opportunities to increase that timer that it kind of feels like, you know, like it's you do have time to explore, and these levels are really mostly about exploration. They are based on levels from Mario 1 and Mario 3 on the NES. But I like the way that they put it on 1UP. They feel like mixtapes of these levels, in that, you know, you start the first level of the DLC. Clearly, it's a rendition of the level 1-1 in Super Mario Brothers. And you enter the first pipe, and you land in level 1-2.
Yeah.
And you're just like, wow, like, this is pretty cool. You know, like, I did not expect that. And so, and that's what these levels are about. They're about, you know, cool surprises and discovery and unexpected things. And you can find 1UP mushrooms, not 1UP mushrooms, but golden mushrooms pretty much anywhere. The difficulty in these levels is 1 star. So that means that it's very, very easy to reach a target of, 30,000 coins. And, yeah, it's just fun to go through these levels and explore and go inside, you know, pits that normally would kill you in the original game, but then, oh, okay, a star coin. That's pretty cool. And, you know, like just these levels taking unexpected turns, you know, like they are familiar because you've played them before, but then they just throw enough twists in them to really make it exciting again. So, yeah, I really enjoyed them. And it kind of made me feel like, okay, like if I enjoy getting these golden mushrooms so much, finding them out of thin air, you know, maybe it would be worth it to purchase some of the other packs. And now I understand better when James said that the coins, you know, packs were really the ones that are the most enticing. But then I went through the levels enough times to basically see everything they had to offer, and I've had my fill. So I'm still kind of doubting the value of buying this DLC. I just, like, at some point I just get my fill, and I don't really have the desire to go through them again. I don't think I've gotten the 9 star coins that are throughout these 3 levels. And I don't really feel the need to, because the game doesn't track it anyway.
Right. Those are a way for you to just get to up your coin total.
Yeah. And once you've reached a target of 30,000 coins, and once you've seen, you know, enough of the secrets, I just don't feel compelled to run through these levels again. So, I don't know. Like, it was really, really fun. But I'm still, you know, waiting perhaps on some sort of rebate on the other DLC.
I wouldn't count on that, but I thought these free levels were probably the most fun I've had with New Super Mario 2. I thought they were probably the best thing I've played in the entire game.
But do you think that was because of the familiarity or because of the
That's
surprises?
Part of it. Part of it, but also I felt like there were so many alternate paths and little secrets that were really surprisingly well hidden and required you to use the powers that you have in ways that I hadn't really seen in other parts. I just was delighted by it in a way that the rest of the game never really accomplished. It felt like it was not just, you know, throwing coins at you indiscriminately, but actually putting tons of secrets, like way more than you would expect and way more than you have for the same amount of levels in the main game. Such that I actually want to play through this two or three times because there are so many secrets that I'm not going to find them all one time through. And I really, really, really had a good time with it.
I did too. I'm just and I do think that probably the other packs, at least the easy ones, that are all about the coins, would yield pretty much the same results. But I'm, you know, like I'm gonna wait a little bit. I do have another Mario game to play right now, yeah. So perhaps once I'm done with that, I'm gonna be you know, more curious about the DLC and the New Super Mario Brothers 2. Yeah, so I've been playing that, and unfortunately I'm going to have to break this nice streak of Nintendo games that we've got going on. I've been playing before I got the Wii U, the night before I went to the post office to get the Wii U. I finished Ease 7 on the PSP. The game was good enough that I want to talk about it still, you know. So, you know, Johnny, you played the Oath and Fel'Gana on Steam.
Yeah, which is a remake of Ease 3, so it's definitely more old school.
Yeah. This one was made specifically for the PSP, unlike the other six Ease games. And it's definitely... Well, the game is definitely on the action side, and you had described, you know, Metroid elements, kind of, like the way that your character would move. You would get a double jump, you would get, you know, things like that that would affect the way that your character moves and can access new parts of old levels.
A little bit, yeah.
Ease 7 is not like that at all. It is more of a... The Oath and Fel'Gana, it kind of has this 2.5D... thing to it. Like, it's, I would say the view is kind of Metroid Other M. Sometimes you can go, you know, in the foreground, in the background. It is a 3D space, but at other times you're mostly doing the platforming in 2D. In E7, you don't have platforming at all. Your character can't jump. It's all about the combat. And this time you have always two side characters that are following you around. And your character can equip different types of weapons that different enemies are weak or strong against. You know, you'll have like the piercing weapon, the slashing weapon, and the blunt weapon. And each enemy will react differently to these different types of damage. But you'd also have like these two side characters that you can switch to instantly at any time by pressing a button. And so, you know, the combat is so fast. And what ends up happening is that you can switch instantly. Like if you're fighting this, even normal enemies, I'm not even talking about bosses, but you can see, oh, okay, I'm not doing any damage against them. You could let your AI controlled characters, take it out. But it's so much faster to just switch instantly to your big bruiser guy, for instance, and start bashing this enemy with the type of attack that it's actually weak against. And so you end up juggling, you know, between these three characters all the time throughout the game. And it's a really, really fun dynamic. You know, I was kind of reminded of something like Secret of Mana, except with the speed cranked up to 12, you know. Not even 11, 12. And just, it's one of the fastest action RPGs that I've ever played. And it's really, it's a lot of fun. And I had started this game, actually perhaps a year ago. I stopped playing it because eventually I came to a point in the story where it looked like it wanted me to revisit the four areas that I had already visited. And I had had my fill a little bit. Like, I had been playing for maybe 10 hours and I thought, you know what? This seems like a stretch a little bit. I don't really want to revisit these old areas, so I'm going to stop. But this time I picked it up again and I realized that the previous time I had been playing it wrong. because I had found at the time that the bosses especially took forever to take down. You know, that you would keep hacking away at them and their life bar would barely go down. And I thought that was kind of frustrating, and it was just a battle of attrition. You know, you had to kill them before you didn't have any HP left. The only way I saw out of that was to level up before going to the battle. And I was like, oh, you know, like the grinding is kind of killing this game for me. But this time I realized, oh, wait. I've been rolling, dodging attacks all this time because it's so easy to do. The game is so fast. You press a button, you roll across the screen, and you're far away from danger. But if I used a block instead, I could gain skill points.
Ah.
When you do that, you fill up a meter. And when you can also charge your attack, which I don't think I ever knew that you could do, but at some point I just held the button down, and I realized, oh, wait, I'm charging an attack. And that gives you, when you hit an enemy with that, you gain even more skill points. And so you fill up your skill meter, and then that allows you to use special, skills. And when you use those, then you fill up another bar that fills up an extra gauge to use your extra attack. And those can, you know, reduce 25% of the boss's life bar instantly. Actually, like, if you're not constantly filling up and depleting your skill gauge and your extra gauge, you're playing it wrong. Because that's really what you're supposed to do. The main attack, just tapping the X button, will not get you anywhere most of the time. You really have to use these special skills. And once you do that, the bosses become so much more satisfying. And yeah, like the game is, you know, a ton of fun, and I find myself looking forward to the Vita sequel. And immediately after I stopped playing it, I started The Oath and Fel'Ghana, which is completely different and therefore a little bit disappointing. But yeah, I'm very, very happy with E7, and I'm going to be following the series from now on.
Nice. Well, it's on Steam. So maybe I'll try to pick it up over like a Christmas sale or something like that.
Yeah, I recommend it.
All right, guys. Well, that is a hell of a lot of new business. We're going to take a break and come back and do a little bit of a listener mail. So stick around.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First off, I would like to point out that Nintendo World Report has a review for every Wii U launch game except for Funky Farm.
And that might be coming soon.
That's right. We might have found a sap to do that.
Carmine to the rescue.
There we go. But first, we have a review of Your Shape, Fitness Evolved by Scott Thompson. Ubisoft got the biggest work out of all of us by making sure they got to market with the Wii U's first fitness game. Turns out they got a lot of healthy features in, but left out the means to track progress.
No!
Well played, Ubisoft. We also have a review of Sonic and All-Stars Racing by Neo.
Transformed.
Let's not think of all the things Jared said, and let's not tempt the game to simply not work. Neo really enjoys Sonic and All-Stars Plus Racing.
Also, let's remember it has Danica Patrick in it.
Good point.
Oh my god!
I hope her character is photorealistic in the game.
I want off now! Let me off this ride!
That would be incredible. If it was literally a photo of Danica Patrick racing against Tails...
I would take that over a you know, a hedgehogified version of her.
I hope the ending is that Sonic and Danica Patrick make out.
No! Oh. Jesus! Fuck you, Sega!
Burn them all. Tyler has a review of Little Inferno, and as you know, they must burn. More on that next week. We also have a review of Ninja Gaiden Razor's Edge by JP Corbrin. Are you in the market for a game harder than a ninja's sword? How about a port that doesn't really use much of the Wii U's features, but turns out is still a good version of a middling game from a year prior? Guess what? Ninja Gaiden is both. It's good and hard.
We have a review, 3D Mahjong by Patrick Barnett. Sure, we have a ton of Wii U reviews, but the 3DS has given us more important things to cover. Sadly, that's in the form of Mahjong. And it turns out Mahjong is always going to be Mahjong, even when you try to make it play marginally faster. It's 3D too, I have to mention.
It's like real Mahjong, it's 3D.
We've got a Wii Mode FAQ by Andy Gergen. As we all know, Nintendo likes to keep things simple, so this guide on how to use the Wii Mode of the Wii U may seem unnecessary. However, if you can't decipher the indecipherable logic that drives Nintendo, you may just find it useful.
There's nothing simple about Wii Mode on Wii U.
No.
Nothing at all. That transfer, literally about three times I stopped in the middle of the transfer process because I thought I was doing it wrong.
Feature Miniature Mario Merchandise by Andrew Brown. Andrew is collecting Japanese capsule choco eggs featuring Mario statues. Learn the details of Japanese confectionery and the depths of his ability to spend money collecting Mario doodads.
Those depths are very deep.
They are exceedingly, troublingly deep.
Yeah, so obviously there's other stuff going on with 3DS and other Nintendo news, but this week has been all about Wii U and especially reviews. We only touch the surface of them here, and there are many, many more Wii U reviews at the site, so I hope you will go check all of those out and let them drive your purchasing decisions this fall. It's all over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Alrighty, folks, we are back for listener mail. The address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And James has the first email.
I have it right here. I suppose that means I'm supposed to read it.
Please.
RW writes, "Now that the console is out and the first batch of games are here, it's hard not to think the Wii U is nothing more than a mashup of the Xbox, a DS, and Facebook." Has the recent news of Wii U's slow processor and RAM deflated any of your conceptions that this console was to be more akin to the Dreamcast to the PS2 cycle, rather than what it stands now, a dual-screen console with six-year-old tech?
Ooh.
Granted, I'm really loving Blops too. New Super Mario Bros. And Nintendo Lands are on the back burner. And I don't regret the purchase, but I can't help think this is yet another three-year console that will be considered the machine that plays Nintendo games.
Now, before we pounce on this and talk about it, the next email is very similar, a little bit different perspective on it, so I thought maybe Jared could go ahead and read that as well. We can kind of talk about this topic all together.
Sure. Eric writes, "Hey guys, I'm really enjoying my Wii U. I think the gamepad tech is really cool, and Miiverse is amazing. I fully expect it to be ripped off by both Microsoft and Sony, but I can't help but feel there is a dark cloud on the horizon. Looking at the console teardowns this week, along with some third-party developers' comments, we now know that while the Wii U does have more RAM than current systems, it's actually slower than either the 360 or PS3s. This, coupled with the news that the CPU is also underclocked compared to the current generation, has me really scratching my head. I know that Nintendo was never going to have the best hardware for this new generation of consoles, but I thought they were going to make it fairly close. Think Dreamcast to the PS2. The Wii U doesn't even beat the current generation in all the technical aspects. How can Nintendo think this will be A-OK in 2 years when the 720 and PS4 are running at full steam? Did they not notice all of the third-party support completely dry up on the Wii? That was as much about the Wii's lack of power than it was about the completely different controller. For once, I'd just like to be able to buy a Nintendo console to play all the great Nintendo games and third-party games.
Wow, you guys really set a somber tone.
Well, I wanted to present it as if I was reading something on November 11th at a memorial service. So I went ahead and did.
Wow.
I don't know. I think there's a weird numbers obsession going on here, because I'll be honest, numbers don't, I mean, they matter, but they don't matter.
You mean specs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's more to the capacity of a processor to do work than simply the number of megaflops it puts out, mm-hmm. or whatever bullshit Apple term you want to use.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, like, I remember back in the GameCube days, the GameCube specs were not very impressive. And certainly on the component level, they weren't very I mean, in some of the components that GameCube had were less powerful than PS2. But they fit everything together in such a way that the power of the system was balanced. And they were all about – and Nintendo was out on front back then saying, oh, we're removing all the bottlenecks and we're streamlining the performance of the system so everything works together. And a lot of developers would tell us in interviews that they would go in there and the system – they would keep throwing stuff at it, and it could do more than they thought it could, and it was really surprising them because Nintendo had done a good job of that. And in the end, I think most people realized the GameCube was almost as powerful as the Xbox, even though it was much cheaper to make, and certainly a lot more powerful than PS2, even though it didn't necessarily look like that on paper. So,
I would say that one of the ways that the Wii gained specs on the GameCube actually is Nintendo went back and looked at the architecture, which is more or less the same architecture between the two. I mean, obviously, the pieces are more powerful, and removed inefficiencies they saw in the design that they couldn't mm-hmm. do once the console's already out. And I'm sure they did the same thing here. I mean, keep in mind, this is not a whole new architecture for Nintendo. This is a very similar setup to what they had before.
Right.
So it's you should expect that while these numbers may not be eye-popping, they certainly are going to be better reflected in what the system can output than what the numbers would suggest.
I'm sure that's
but
the
we
case.
Don't the one of the big problems is that we don't really have the launch game to show us no. you know what the numbers don't say. Like we
right.
had
yeah.
Rogue Squadron on the GameCube. And immediately, I think people got that, oh, okay, maybe this thing is
right.
really powerful. And we don't have a Rogue Squadron now.
No. Ba-ba is not that game.
No, I mean, you do have, you know, for instance, Assassin's Creed 3 runs just as well and looks just as good on Wii U as it does on PS3, for instance. Which is not the most impressive feat ever, considering PS3 is a, you know, 6-year-old system. But it certainly, I think, does some to debunk the idea that Wii U is actually less powerful than the other current consoles. I don't know that it's significantly more powerful. I was hoping that it would be, and maybe it still will turn out to be more powerful than those systems, you know, once the developers figure it out. But I think it's interesting. If you look at the developers that are getting quoted a lot, you know, people making comments on Twitter about how weak the system specs are, and you know, the guys who are making Metro Last Light are now saying they're not sure that they're ever going to release that game on Wii U because they looked at the processor and it was so slow. They don't think they can get their engine running on it. I mean, these are people who never made Wii games. You know, Epic made a similar comment, and Epic never made a Wii game. So I think these are people who don't know the architecture, just like James said, and so they're not familiar. They don't have engines that currently run on Wii tech, and so scaling it up to Wii U isn't an option for them, and adapting their engines, especially like a PC centric developer like the guys who, you know, made Stalker and Metro 2033, they're not comfortable working with these very streamlined lower spec consoles. That's not their experience, and so developing an engine that takes advantage of the efficiencies that Nintendo's system has is not something that they really understand how to do. We heard a lot of this kind of stuff back on GameCube as well. So I'm not that surprised by it. I think, you know, certainly it looks like Wii U is not a big upgrade. I wasn't expecting to be a huge upgrade over the 360 and PS3, but I thought it would be kind of an obvious upgrade, and it sounds like it's actually, if it is an upgrade over those systems, it's a very subtle one, and it's one that probably not many developers will ever figure out how to take advantage of, and that's really a shame. But, I mean, to Guillaume's point, I think it is important probably in the next few months for someone to show off a Wii U game. Hopefully it's Nintendo, hopefully it's Retro Studios or someone like that, to show off a Wii U game that actually looks spectacular and looks like something that is not quite like anything you've seen on the other consoles right now, and shows that, hey, this thing's a lot more powerful than you think it is, and maybe you should take a closer look at it. Because what I'm afraid is that developers are just going to get turned off by all this chatter, and they're not even going to try to put their stuff on the system.
I take issue with the statement that it's just a mashup of Xbox and Facebook.
Oh, that statement's insane.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, personally, I fell in love pretty instantly with the Miiverse, and that's really the last feature that I was thinking of when I was buying this thing. And it really came out of left field, especially since it was never really demoed before, and all we had seen of its use were, you know, poorly scripted skits with Okto-G and whoever. But yeah, like the idea of Miiverse makes so much sense now when I think back to some of the things that Miyamoto or Nintendo have said in general before. I'll just give you an example. I've been playing New Super Mario Bros. U, and some people have noticed, it takes inspiration from Super Mario World, but Super Mario World at least had the decency of telling you right there on a map which levels had secret exits, which ones didn't. And I thought, yeah, like, that's pretty disrespectful of player's time. I mean, like, am I really expected to scour each and every one of these levels in the hopes that there is a secret in them, you know, and probably most of the time it would be fruitlessly because most of them don't. And, oh, sure, Neil just posted, like, look for secrets here, but I've already found the secret exit on 1-2, and, wait. Like, this is really one of the purposes of the Miiverse. It's right there in the in your game. You know, it's not an external thing. You don't have to pick up your phone to go tweet about this game to your friends, and everyone that you're sending your messages to already have the game. They're reading it from the game sometimes, and it's right there. And the second point is that, you know, Miyamoto had talked about the original Legend of Zelda and how it was designed to foster this kind of conversation on the playground, you know, like, oh, have you found this secret? Like, check out this crazy thing I found by burning that bush, that, you know. They really wanted to have this sense that, you know, people would talk about their games together and figure things out together. And I really find that that's the case with Miiverse. I did not expect to see that, but it's really been kind of a revelation. And right now I don't really have any artistic talent, so I can't dazzle people with my, scribbles or whatever, but, you know, something as simple as, Nano Assault, which doesn't really use the Miiverse, you know, integrated within the game, you can just instantly take a screenshot of, you know, whatever is on the gamepad or on the TV screen. So I know that one of the features that people won't find right away is that you can rearrange your satellites around your ship. So I took a picture of my ship with the satellites brought really, really close to it. And, you know, I just said something like, I hope you're all doing this. You know, like, this will improve your accuracy and take enemies down faster. And, you know, people just saw that and, oh, I didn't realize you could even do that in the game. Cool. And, you know, like, they just liked, you know, they yayed my post. And so I get to feel awesome about that. I get more competition on the leaderboards. People are doing better. And, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And you help people, and then those people have an opportunity to help you. which is nice. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I play a lot of games, and often I don't like to get roadblocked for very long. So if I try something and I get frustrated, I'm not making progress, I'll go to GameFAQs. And especially if it's a brand new game, a lot of times there isn't an FAQ or a walkthrough posted yet. And so I'll go to the message board. And GameFAQs is interesting because they have a separate message board for every single game in their entire database, which is almost every game ever made.
Yeah, and each and every one of them is really a hostile place.
Maybe I don't actually post there. I only read it. I only consume the posts that are there. And it's frustrating because, you know, there are people on there who really like the game and they like to share information. And sometimes the message boards are a goldmine of really interesting and useful tips. But a lot of times they're just spoilers right in the title. Or you're looking for a very specific piece of information, and there's not a great way to ask it. If you're just browsing through and you figure, well, someone else has asked this question before, I just need to browse through here and find the thread where this topic has come up. Even if it exists, you might have to go through several pages of topics, and in the process, you might click on some topics, some threads that you think will answer your question, they don't, and instead they just spoil something really important in the game. It's not a great environment. It's not a great way to do that. And Miiverse strikes me as like a really huge improvement over that process. The same idea is that every game has a community. It's a place where people can talk about it, but you've got spoiler controls. You can draw things or post screenshots in order to be a lot more descriptive about what you're talking about. Your friends can, you know, you can filter it by posts from your friends who you might have more confidence that they will be helpful or that they will not try to spoil the whole game or tell you the wrong thing. So it's a very like rich kind of media dense version of the GameFAQs game specific boards. And I can see myself using that a lot because I mean, I already use GameFAQs a lot, even though it sucks for that kind of thing. And having an improved version of it in Miiverse, I think is really, really exciting.
Yeah. I've seen the, one of the arguments that I've seen thrown around is that Miiverse is a feature that can be easily copied. It's just putting a social network in your console. You know, Microsoft could do that, but the gamepad is really integral to that because it makes it so much easier to type. Mm-hmm. And not just that, but the fact that you're playing directly on the gamepad. Another Nano Assault anecdote. I was just checking the. I had already prepared myself to go to bed. And I picked up the gamepad and I was checking the Miiverse, you know, one last time before going to bed. And I saw a friend of mine just posted a screenshot of the leaderboards, said, hey, I'm, you know, second, you know, right in front of me, on the leaderboards and just, you know, bragging about it. And I was like, oh no, you didn't. So,
oh no, you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Oh no, you didn't. Whatever. Terrible.
Stop enunciating and just babble it out. There you go.
All right. So, I was already set to go to sleep, but, you know, like the game was just a click away. So right there in my bed, I set out to try to beat his high score. And I did, of course, because I'm awesome. But, you know, like if I had to turn on the TV, like go in the living room, turn on the TV, turn on the console, you know, and set everything up, I would never have done that. But because it was so easy and so, you know, close and accessible, it was like nothing, you know. So I really feel like this feature adds so much to the experience.
Well, and to tie it back into the original question about the power of the system, you know, I mean, Wii U has, we found out, 2 gigs of RAM, which is a lot more than Xbox 360 and PS3 have. But Nintendo, I think, has actually even said publicly that half of that, 1 gigabyte, is just for the operating system. It's just for, a lot of it has to do with compressing video to send to the gamepad and getting stuff back from it, touch inputs, etc. But I think a lot of it also is giving you access to that home menu where you can just pause the game. You can actually open up Miiverse, do stuff in Miiverse, and then go back to your game, which was just paused the whole time. And that's not something you can really do on the other systems. I mean, you can go to the the guide or the cross media bar on the other consoles. But if you try to open anything else, it's going to close down your game. You can't really suspend it. So this is more like on 3DS, actually. It's a really nice feature. You can sort of suspend your game and go check notifications or something like that. You can even open the web browser, all while your game is just waiting for you to go back to it. And the Miiverse integration, I think, is a really nice justification for doing that. It maybe is a big penalty on the system performance. They're using that much RAM to do that kind of stuff. But you know, the fact that you can open Miiverse, go look for tips and stuff like that, leave messages, check on your friends or whatever, and then just go right back into your game wherever you left off is pretty cool. It's nothing like that on the other systems.
Yeah, the switching between apps could be faster, but some people have been over
super slow.
Yeah, some people have been overstating the waiting times, though. I've read like 30 seconds, which I don't know where they get those figures. But yeah, like I 10, think some 15 of the seconds.
Some games take 30 seconds to load.
It depends on the game
from the menu, but yeah, like opening up Miiverse takes, I don't know, for me like 15 to 20 seconds. It's definitely a lot longer than it seems like it should take. But that's the kind of thing that very well could get improved in the future when they update and streamline the service. I hope they find a way to do that. It'd make it a lot easier to use, but you know, it certainly is some unique functionality. And that's, you know, a lot of the performance, a lot of the power that they put into the system, it went into that. And I think, you know, honestly, I don't know that Nintendo cares that much about tailoring this for third-party games. I don't think they care all that much about whether this thing runs Unreal Engine 3 or 4 or 3.5. I think they should, but I don't think Nintendo really cares. I think they designed it to run the gamepad and to do all the crazy things that they want to do with the system, and third parties just kind of have to figure it out. That's what they've always done, and this seems just, you know, very much the same.
One other thing about the power of the system. Have you guys heard at all about the rumored clock speed of the cores for the system that was reported today? I guess a well-known Wii hacker, Markin, on Twitter, he says he was able to, using some kind of Wii U hacks, was able to find out that each core is clocked at 1.24 gigahertz. And just based on that, I mean, I was wondering if you guys think if that makes you view the situation any differently, you know, when something like the Xbox 360 has a clock of 3.2 gigahertz, just the how big a gap that is.
How many cores are there? 360 only has two cores on its main processor.
Three cores on Wii.
Three cores. Wii. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, processor cross-threading is not nearly as... I mean, 6 years ago, that was still weird, crazy town stuff. I mean, it's so... Again, this goes down to the value of numbers has diminished greatly in the last decade. And I know this is going to sound Nintendo Defense Force-y, but it's the technology that is used to manage the discussions between individual components is really where your latency comes in now. And that's a huge change from even, you know, just a few years ago. If I look at the processor power of my i3 notebook, which is, you know, slightly larger than a netbook, and my netbook on number size, the i3 is not that much more powerful. But in terms of performance, it destroys the netbook. Why? Well, because it's using the i3 core architecture. It's not using the what is essentially a modified Celeron.
The Atom.
Yeah. I mean, it's night and day. Even though the numbers are more or less the same, they're pretty. I mean, it feels like it's many times faster.
Hmm.
It's just using numbers is simplistic to the point where it's really. I mean, it's relevant, but it's not going to tell you what you need to know. And to be honest, just clocking things really isn't going to help that much either. There's a reason the performance testing is usually done just by benchmarking how many frameworks something gets – or how many frame rates something can spit out, because it's a more or less architecture-neutral measure. But even that is still somewhat subjective based on what graphics cards are capable of rendering more easily. It's just – we're not going to know what the system is capable of until someone finds the limit. And I think on Wii, you could argue that nobody really found the limit. I mean, Nintendo pushed it with Galaxy, but even their other internal stuff didn't push it like that did. I mean, you go back to Factor Five's former lead.
Julian Egerbrecht.
Yeah, when he said that 95% of the Wii games don't look as good as what we did on a GameCube launch game.
I agree.
It's like, yeah, so let's at least give developers a chance to try. Now, that doesn't mean they will try, and it may mean they think they can get away with not trying. I mean, I think to an extent, developers on Wii said, well, people don't expect this to be as powerful, so we just won't.
Right.
And
they were porting from PSP or PS2 games.
Oh my
even.
God!
You know, there was a lot of issues like that. But yeah, I mean, there's a distinct developer indifference to the Wii's abilities because they already knew that it was not nearly in comparison with the other systems, and so they didn't even try to push it. Really, very few did. But I mean, you know, you look at a game like The Conduit or Conduit 2, as many problems as I have with those games, they look nice. And clearly those guys, and I don't think High Voltage is all that talented of a development studio. I'm sure there are talented people there, but overall, I don't think those guys are, you know, the best in the business. I don't think they're the masters of pushing technology. I think they just got in their head that they were really going to put a lot of effort into that and do it. And they did. A lot of other people could have done it too if they'd ever given a shit.
Yep. Funny thing about High Voltage, they actually did the Zone of the Enders HD port.
Mm.
Which was shocking to me.
Okay.
Shocking.
I don't know why that's shocking, but okay.
I just didn't expect, like, when of all the logos that could have popped up on the screen when that game started, that was the least.
You got their ugly ass logo.
Yes. It was just like, wait, what?
Yeah, they needed a new logo about 7 years ago. Anyway, you know, and I think to get to RW's sort of final point, you know, that he's worried about this is another 3-year console that'll be considered, you know, the machine that only plays Nintendo games. I think that image has already been broken down right from the start when you look at the stuff that's on the system at launch. I think the challenge for Nintendo is keeping that stuff coming out, you know, especially if the third-party games don't sell all that great. You know, it sounds like Black Ops 2 isn't selling all that great on Wii U. Now, I'd say partly because not that many people have Wii Us yet. A lot of the ones that were sold over Thanksgiving week, for instance, were being sold for Christmas gifts. And so those may not get opened and may not get played, and additional games may not get bought until December or January for a lot of those. So I think it's a little too early to say right now, but I would also say in Black Ops 2, I would already own that game if they would just put it on the eShop. I don't know what the holdup there is, but I'm getting 10% back. I'm not getting that game on sale, you know, at retail, so I'd like to download it. I'd really like to download it. I'm waiting for that one. Either it gets discounted on a physical copy or I get to download it. One of those two things is going to happen before I buy it, but I intend to buy it at some point. So I'm not that worried about it. I think all these publishers probably have realistic expectations for a supply limited console launch. And, you know,
sure. I mean,
with the number of launch games, nothing's going to sell 5 million copies.
No, I mean, all the publishers have been through this before. I mean, nobody here is new to the game system launch. They know what they're dealing with, and we should know what we're dealing with too. I mean, none of us are new to this. It's we can't evaluate anything about Wii U yet. I know that sounds ridiculous considering we've had them for a week, but we know nothing at this point.
Yeah.
If you had told me what was going to happen, if you had asked me what the Wii's life cycle was going to be a week in, I would have missed on everything. It would have been a fucking disaster. And if you asked me 3 years into its life cycle what the next 3 years are going to be like, I'd have been wrong. I mean, it's easy to write history before it's happened, but you're not going to be accurate. So, I mean, let's wait a bit. I mean, even don't have to wait that long. If it's a question about power, we'll start seeing things pretty soon. I mean, I think actually where you'll see stuff might be on eShop originals, because there's a quicker time to market, and they're going
to
actually
– indie developers have more to prove.
Yeah. But and they'll be starting from scratch. They aren't ports.
Well, some of them are already.
But... Well, no, that's what I mean when I said originals.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, you'll see stuff.
One of the better looking games on the eShop right now is a 3DS port. And it's from a team that probably can do better starting from scratch. You know, they know hardware. They know how to push hardware.
You're referring to Nano Assault and not Mighty Switch Force, right?
Yes.
Good.
Yes. But yeah, like they've been pushing conservative hardware before. I don't think they worked on the 360 or the PS3, but I mean, you know, give them more power, I doubt they're going to do worse.
Right.
Let's
right.
just say.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would have been okay if the Wii had been a 3-year system. My problem is that it was a 6-year system. And that's where in the fourth and the fifth, and especially in the fifth and the sixth years, that's where the lack of power in the system really hurt it. Not just in third party games, but in first party games. I mean, it just got to a point where it didn't seem like even Nintendo didn't care about pushing the hardware or really doing anything interesting with the system after a while. And they necessarily have to move on to the next thing, whereas the third parties aren't necessarily in such a big rush to move on to the next generation. So, because they don't have to sell you the hardware. They don't have to justify your new hardware purchase like Nintendo does. So I think that was the big problem. But look at the third-party support for Wii in the first few years. It was pretty good. It might not have been what we wanted to play, but some of it was. Some of it was really good. And there was certainly plenty of it. So, you know, whether the Wii U ends up being, you know, kind of petering out halfway through. I mean, look, this is a Nintendo system. I expect that. I'm realistic. When is the last time that we had good third-party support 5 years into a Nintendo platform? It was 1996, and it wasn't that great in that year either. So, I'm sorry. I just have to be realistic here. I'm expecting to play some good third-party games in the next 2 or 3 years, and then after that, it's probably all on Nintendo. And they can either choose to do a really great job of it, which they've done in the past with some of their systems, or they can let it just kind of die off and be really shitty and focus on other things, or they can hurry up the new system after that, which it may very well be what they do. Maybe they say, Wii U doesn't need to have a 6-year life cycle. It can do 3 or 4. And we can just bring out the next one. I mean, that's the cycle. That's about the frequency they do on handhelds. And it seems to work really well for them.
You know, I think one thing to keep in mind is the discussion of the currently Canada-only hamburger box Wii. the Wii Mini. One of the salient points that came out is that it doesn't have any internet, which is insane, but it doesn't have
it. Weird. Think about how much money they can make selling Mario Brothers and Legend of Zelda to people.
Well, Kohler has a really good article discussing the Mini, and I advise you go read it. I'm not going to rehash it here because I'll forget some of the details. But what is interesting for this discussion is, remember, one of the PR reps mentions precisely that it plays one of the 1,300 disc games released for Wii.
1,300?
Tell me the last time a Nintendo system had 1,300 games released for it.
Maybe NES?
It is the NES.
I don't think DS had that many.
NES had, what was it? God, it was considerably more than even that.
So the NES and not the Famicom.
Well, fine. That system, but this is I can't remember the details of
Famicom
the
probably
breakdown.
Had more than NES, but that's nitpicking.
Yeah, but still, yes, 1,300 games. Let's say Nintendo made at most 100 of those.
Right.
Yeah, I mean that number's 1,300 is insane. They didn't come anywhere close to that.
I think. You look at the stuff that they published, it probably put out 100 Wii games.
Okay, fine. It was 100. That still leaves 1,200 Wii games you have to account for. Granted, most of them aren't that great. But, you know, that's still a huge number. Yeah.
You're not lacking for choice.
No.
That's interesting. Wow.
You may end up with Anubis 2, which Johnny wouldn't let me buy at E3 2 years ago. It was a local California drugstore chain.
Oh man, there was some funny stuff in there.
Oh. Yeah. Anubis 2, get excited. it just happens to be the worst Wii game ever.
From the makers of Ninja Bread Man.
Yeah.
It makes Ninja Bread Man look like an opus.
An opus. The Ninja Bread opus. Oh, man. So let's move on to the next email. This topic about the future of Wii U is going to be evergreen for us. Don't worry. We'll have a lot more to say about it over time.
The next 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't want to overdo it this week. We're still enjoying things. Let's not think about the future. Let's enjoy the present. Just have fun with your Wii U and don't worry about, am I still going to be playing this in 2 or 3 years? You know, that's up to you. But, yeah. So the next email, the final email for this week, comes from JCZ. And it's called the Super Wii Commercial Explanation Video. This is James Charlton, of course, our former Japan correspondent, former host of the Famicast, big RFN listener and a good friend of ours, and he wanted to chime in on the discussion we had. So JCZ says, the way the grammar was used in the video was super nawi, which means a super Wii. Super is used as an adjective, like an awesome Wii or a souped up Wii. The super Wii would be something akin to Super Famicom, etc. Excuse me, let me start that over. The quote, super Wii would be something akin to Super Famicom, etc. So whereas they may be indulging Japanese gamers' nostalgia by describing it that way, it is in no way saying that this is the Super Wii. More akin to the 360 being described as the next box or something like that. He also says, Supa is a frequently, very frequently used foreign loan word in Japan. Everyone understands it. It's God. Super drink, super power, super taste, super, super, supa in Japan. And talking of foreign loan words, I asked my Japanese native wife what she thought of when she heard of warawara. She said, huh? I repeated it. She looked at me as if to say, what the fuck are you talking about? That's not Japanese. So yeah, nice going, Bill Trinan. You're trying to introduce a useless, barely used Japanese word to the world. Slow ass golf clap. It's like trying to make shagadelic a buzzword in Japan. To be fair, I think warawara is an onomatopoeia, so it's probably not something that would come up in everyday Japanese conversation. It's a boutique word even in Japanese.
They use it a lot, but I mean not warawara, onomatopoeia. Onomatopoeia is so frequently used in Japanese language that really you have to know what they mean.
But maybe not this particular onomatopoeia.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because
it's supposed to mean the sound that people make when they
I guess
when they chatter, when they kind of mumble. Yeah, is it kind of
that's what Iwata says. But there was a Twitter conversation between JCZ, Minoru and Matt Walker that I'm trying to find. Here we go. This is the exact quote. So the three of them were going back and forth about what it means, or JC and Matt Walker were. But Minoru jumps in and goes, but these days, warawara more often means, quote, LOL with the flavor of scorn.
Wow.
They
should just call it the LOL Plaza.
That
would be amazing.
A flavor of scorn. I mean, they're just sitting there discussing the nomenclature of Japanese and usage things, and his response is tremendous. Basically, it's something that you forum posts get ended with is what I pieced together. Hmm. It's
like a
here
meme.
We go. Yeah, here we go. This is so Carly injects herself and said it's Super Troll Iwata at work again. And Minoru says, warawara is usually used at the end of trolling posts like this. And he shows it written in katakana. Oh my god.
Why would they write it in katakana if it's
Because onomatopoeia are always written in katakana.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I haven't been following this issue, this important issue, Warawara Gate, very closely. But is it like too late to change it? Because you don't see Warawara anywhere when you open the Wii U,
right?
When you turn it on,
you know. I think this is ultimately Nintendo of America is just kind of fucking with us because
apparently they are.
It's clearly it's not a great name, but it doesn't have to be because they're not really committing to it because you never see it on the screen and it's not really a very distinct feature from the Miiverse and all the branding, even within the user interface, even within the operating system of Wii U, it just says Miiverse. So they never actually in the system call it Warawara Plaza. I think it's just kind of like a weird Bill Trennan joke. Like it affects so few people that he's like, let's just call it whatever we want.
Yeah, right now I'm looking at the online manual, which they can, you know, amend and edit at will, with each new update. And I don't see anything. Like I'm looking at the Miiverse chapter. There's no mention of Warawara. So yeah, it looks like, yeah, it might just be some sort of joke.
It's like a nickname, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's really hilarious though. As far as the Super Wii thing, I just, you know, this is, I thought it was an interesting cultural note, on the name, and I'm not really surprised by that explanation, but it's good to have the clarification. And, I just also wanted to mention some of the other podcasts that I listen to. This has come up quite frequently. It's been a popular topic on some of the other gaming podcasts. The Giant Bombcast spent 5 minutes talking about Super Wii. And I love hearing people say it, and I love hearing at least some of the people have support for it. And some people make the same arguments that you guys made, that it sounds kind of old fashioned or that it may not actually be a very convincing, way to, you know, let people know that it's, you know, better than the Wii, or it's not even that, it is true that it really doesn't do justice to how different, not just better, but how very different the Wii U is from the original Wii. I think they should have gotten rid of the Wii branding altogether. I don't know that they really gain that much from sticking with it. Obviously they disagree. But I would have preferred that they just got rid of the Wii name and went with something different. But if you're going to keep Wii as part of the name, I don't think you could do much worse than just sticking the letter U at the end. And that's ultimately, that's my point. I don't know that Super Wii is the ultimate best answer to this question, but it sure as hell is better than Wii U.
I will say, when I was put on the spot to try to make sense of this ad, I wouldn't have, even if I had sat down and spent time with it, I wouldn't have gotten it together because I shamefully was unaware of the usage of that particular particle. I deeply apologize. By the way, if you can't tell, I bowed discussing that. So.
Right. Yeah, I could tell in your voice, and I'm scared that you're gonna commit seppuku.
You learn something new every day. It's like I said, because Japanese doesn't have enough particles.
I still think there's a chance, and it's going to be fascinating if this happens. But I think there's still a chance that the Super Wii ad is, or the Super Nawi ad, is so successful and popular in Japan that they will try to bring it over to the West, either in Europe or in America. And they, we will have some weird local flavor of the whole confusing Super Wii ad. But I could see that happening. Or they'll put it in one of their weird, like, pretty girls laying on a couch playing Nintendo stuff.
Oh, God.
And they'll have one of them.
I'm not a gamer, but when I have my Super Wii.
Yes, exactly.
I am an artist.
Or one of them will literally say, the Wii U, or they'll be like talking to each other, you know, like the Penelope Cruz talking to her like super crazy, unearthly hot sister. And one of them will be like, what is this thing? And the other will be like, it's like a Super Wii. I think this is highly likely that this is going to happen. And it's going to be interesting to see this reaction blow through all over again, with more attention on it from the local media. So anyway, just a fun little discussion there. Thank you, JCZ, for the expertise, the expert opinion. And we're going to wrap it up, guys. It's been a long night and a long week, and we've got more games to play. So just wanted to remind everyone, you can send your emails, questions, comments, ideas, topics, whatever, complaints, sure, You can send all of those to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com or go to the show notes at the website, and there will be a link there as well. That's at nintendoworldreport.com. And I want to thank our guest this week, Jared Rosenberg. You did a great job, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Jared is, of course, the video producer at NWR. And Jared, what are some of the videos that you've done lately that you really think people should go check out?
Well, lately, Zach Miller and I recently did a Mighty Switch Force video review, if you want to check that out. And for the future, that we should have a few more video reviews. We'll actually have a Little Inferno video review that should be up by the time you hear this.
That might be educational.
By the way, is
terrifying.
By the way, is the audio file that I sent you usable in any way?
Yes, it will work. There will also be a Nano Assault video review. Pretty much the Wii U eShop games.
Oh, that's a great idea. Since they don't have demos, that's really helpful.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks, Jared. Thank you, James and Guillaume. We will be back next week with more Wii U and 3DS talk. See you then.
And 1 week closer to the live show.
I feel like we're 1 week farther away from the live show.
Oh, I meant the much more interesting one.
Oh, the retroactive is doesn't concern me at all. That's so easy compared to the telethon. I haven't even started thinking about doing that.
I'm just
I haven't recovered Majora's Mask from the Wii Shop yet. Will I get there in time? I don't know.
I'm just trying to force Guillaume to think about it.
Jared, really quick, what do you think about Majora's Mask?
I like Majora's Mask a lot.
Ah, excellent. Okay, so will you start playing it. You've got about a month or two to play Majora's Mask, and we're going to talk about it live on the internet next
year.
Early next year. Okay, guys, thanks for listening. We'll be back next time.
Bye.
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 It's all over at NintendoWorldReport.com.
It's all over.
All over my face. All over NintendoWorldReport.com.
I don't...